This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, everybody. Saturday, December 21st, 2013. Heading right into the heart of the holiday season. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joined in studio by David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. The one, the only Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus, producer. Tim Debenham, another producer. And Jesse, the intern. We got a whole cast of characters in here. You know. No Drew, no cry is what we say today. We have a lot of course, you know, a ton to talk about. The Winnipeg Jets' victory over the Florida Panthers. We'll start with that in a second. But throughout the show, we're going to discuss a number of topics, you know, pertaining to the Winnipeg Jets. Such as the question, does Dustin Byfuglien playing too much? Something to consider. What the Jets need to do record-wise to make the playoffs. The upcoming schedule for the Jets. We're going to have two guests on, Mike Colligan of the Hockey Writers out of Pittsburgh and Forbes Sports Money to talk about the Penguins. They have a ton of injuries on the back end, but it does not seem to be phasing that team. It's playing quite well. We're going to talk to him about Crosby. We're going to talk to him about Kunitz. We're going to talk to him about Fleury. A bunch of Team Canada hopefuls there. And we're going to have Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network on in the second hour. Many, including myself, expected the Ducks to have a little bit of a setback season based on their performance last year. That has been anything but the case. The Ducks have been, once again, one of the top teams of the National Hockey League. There's a lot to talk about there, again, pertaining to Team Canada with respect to Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff, who has been playing out of this world, and some wondered whether or not those two guys would be on the team. It's looking more and more like they will be on the team. So there's a ton to talk about. We're going to talk about the Winter Classic, all the other outdoor games, the odds to win the Stanley Cup. It's going to be a great show. So I welcome in, of course, the aforementioned Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk.
Richie, great intro. It's a fun day after a Jets win, quite frankly, when the Jets haven't won in such a long time at the MTS Center. And, you know, Drew's out of town, but we bring in Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and we don't miss a single beat at all. Just things go smoothly, even better, I would say.
Ooh. Shot across the Drew's bow.
All the way to Kentucky. No, yeah, there's a lot of joy in Joyland right now, as Coach Noel likes to say. Everybody is happy in Jets Nation because of the bounce back win after the terrible loss to the Buffalo Sabres. So it seems like there's a little bit more fun right now in the city.
Well, let's start with the win because we're going to get into a bunch of the other stuff later. Last night the Jets come out, they beat the Florida Panthers 5-2. To me, the biggest key to that whole game was that they came out and they were engaged early. They dropped the gloves. Chris Thorburn dropped the gloves. Not when they were down 4-2 in the second period.
Did Chris Barch ever drop the gloves? What was that?
But even so, as you know, they were hitting. They came out and attacked a team that had traveled the night before. The Jets seemed very engaged, and to be honest, the crowd was therefore engaged. It's a holiday season. You know, some of the fans of that game might not have been the usual fans. They're in from out of town and all that stuff. I thought the Jets game last night was what I would have liked to have seen more from them over the first 37 games. Now, you can't go back and change the past, but if the Jets have any shot at making the playoffs, they have to come out with that kind of energy level on a game-in, game-out basis. And I think as a fan, I worry a little bit about where that's been.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And you mentioned the Chris Thorburn, Chris Barch fight, and you also had Andrew Ladd and Eric Branson going at it. And for me, too, that was nice to see because we haven't seen that much out of Andrew Ladd, and I know that Andrew Ladd is the leader of this team, and he's counted on for a lot of goals, and he's put out in different situations, power play and penalty kill, Richie, but it was nice to see him coming in there and sticking up for Jacob Trouba. And he comes in there, and, you know, they don't, it's not really a fight, but, you know, Andrew Ladd is saying, no, you're coming into our building, Gudbranson, a big guy, by the way. Ladd gives up a lot of size to Eric Gudbranson. But to me, Rich, you mentioned the fact that they were engaged physically and emotionally, and they came out there, and they played really well in the first period. And, you know, Sean Mathias got that goal off of the Buff turnover, mm-hmm. but really after that, the Panthers didn't do much in the entire game, and they, we know that they came in here at 3 in the morning, and they were coming off a three-game in four-night stretch through.
Somehow they went to bed the same time as you.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And Eastern Canada, and they picked up wins against the Senators and the Leafs and the Habs, and that's good for them because the Panthers don't really figure in to the Eastern Conference playoff picture right now, but they've been playing really well.
Right.
But I think there was a perfect storm for the Jets to get this win, Dave, because they hadn't won at home since mid-November. They had to get this win after all of these disappointing one goal games, and it was nice to see the Jets finish off a team and not have to depend on the shootout or the overtime. We've seen so many games this year at the MTS Center that have been one goal games that have either gone in the Jets' favor or in the other way, and it was nice to see them really get those clean 2 points because at this point, getting towards the end of December. They have to go on a run here. So you got to follow this up with some wins on the road against Vancouver and Edmonton.
You know, it was interesting to me that they did a couple things of note for me from the game last night. Was number one, they didn't completely collapse when Buff coughed up the puck early, and they started down already 1-0. Mm-hmm. So that was a key. You know, they didn't kind of fall down and lie down and just kind of keel over. That was one. The other thing that was really notable was the play of Tobias Enstrom and Zach Bogosian's return to the ice. I thought he brought a steady influence. I thought Zach Bogosian played a very good game. I thought Enstrom's game was elevated. I thought mm-hmm. we thought he was one of the best players on the ice. So I really thought that there was a different, almost a more confident defensive group. Now, of course, you know, the only thing is that you're playing against a tired Florida team. So it'll be interesting to see what happens against Vancouver on Sunday. But, you know, from my point of view, the defense of the Jets played very well.
I think you have to note that, Richie, but if you spin it the other way, if the Jets are using that as an excuse, because now the Jets have to go into Vancouver and Edmonton and have back-to-back games, mm-hmm. so they can't use that as excuse for not beating Edmonton, because the Jets are clearly a better team than the Edmonton Oilers right now, I would say. I think you guys would agree with that. Vancouver Canucks, obviously not. So the Vancouver Canucks, you got to go in there, and you're stealing a couple points. Edmonton, you're not stealing points. You're expecting to win, even though that can be dangerous. But point being, sure, Florida, you don't want to take anything away from the Jets, because, okay, The Panthers are coming in here. They don't get a lot of sleep. They'd won 7 of their last 8 games. Mm-hmm. So you still got to give credit where it's due. And for them, they're not using that excuse. There was nobody in the dressing room yesterday that was saying, oh, yeah, I mean, we were tired. I mean, Florida still needs those points just as much as the Jets do. The Florida Panthers right now are in 13th place in the East. Well, it's not like they're in the driver's seat for a playoff spot.
There's 3 points separating those two teams last night going into the game. I know they played different conferences, and the East is definitely worse than the West, but they still were only 3 points apart. I want to talk about, we're going to talk about the matchups about next week's game. You mentioned Vancouver, Edmonton, and of course Minnesota, who's going to be at home here. The power play. It's so much easier to create offense when you're able to score in the power play. Yesterday, the Jets scored 2 power play goals, one on the 5-on-3, one on the 5-on-4. A team that doesn't have that enough natural talent, boy, it sure helps when they can score on the man advantage.
Right. What is it now? 4 of the last 5 games or 5 of the last 6 games, they've scored a power play goal, and they've gone from 30th in the league to 25th in the league. They're nowhere near where they want to be. I bet they would love to be somewhere in the top 10 or at least top 15. So they have a lot of catching up to do, Richie, because we know how many games they went without a power play goal earlier in the season. But it seems to me that they're keeping a little bit more simple. And Olli Jokinen still is not one of the best setup guys. But really, what you're seeing is them feeding the puck to Enstrom and Byfuglien, and they're getting shots on net, and they're getting some screens in front of the net, and it's working. And Jacob Trouba has emerged as a really dependable guy on the power play because he has that ability to come in off of the blue line just like Byfuglien does. So it's absolutely huge when you have a team that can capitalize on those opportunities. Florida, you could tell, was tired, and they took those 3 penalties in the first period. And when you can capitalize on them, that really gives you a lot of momentum.
Well, it does. And you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're recapping the Jets' victory last night over the Florida Panthers. You know, guys, when you are able to also shut it down a bit, and the Jets have, you know, we talk about the loss to Buffalo. We talked about it earlier. We talked about it on Wednesday's show. You're up 2-0. You blow that lead. Yesterday, the Jets have leads, and they keep the game pretty simple. I mean, there was a turnover or two, and then they hit the crossbar, and they hit the post, I think, three posts and crossbars. But they didn't let Florida trickle back into the game. Another thing that I think the Jets have had issues with is, you know, kind of settling it down. So if you're a Jet fan, you have to take, I think you have to take the happenings of last night as accomplishments, and then you have to hope to springboard off of that in the future, because if they can't protect leads and if they can't get off to good starts and be engaged early, they really have no shot here.
I would agree with that. And when you're talking about going into Vancouver, and I know Vancouver maybe isn't what they used to be, but Vancouver is still a pretty darn good team, and Ryan Kesler is looking better than he's looked in the last couple of years with those injuries. So you're going to go into Vancouver, and if you're going to get an early lead against the Canucks and you think that it's going to be easy to lock that down in that building, it's not, because the Vancouver Canucks are a very good offensive team. Same thing goes for the Edmonton Oilers as well. The Edmonton Oilers, well,
I want to talk about that next segment, Izzy. I want to talk more about the ability to lock it down yesterday. I mean, right? Let's think about this. The Jets have a tendency to give away the puck, have a tendency to get out of position and to lose their composure defensively. I thought yesterday, for the most part, they didn't play that complicated of a kind of game like that.
Well, you know what? After the first period, which was just an energetic, and both teams came out flying, and there was a lot of, you know, there was fighting, there was goal scoring. It was 3-1 after the first period. You know, for the Jets to come back and for Evander Kane to get that really nice goal on the pass over from Michael Frolik, you know, that was a huge for the Jets' momentum. I mean, you came out and just over a minute into the second period, the Jets get that goal. And that's a critical goal, because if the Panthers get that goal, it's 3-2, and the Jets' sticks are going to be holding their sticks a little bit tighter, and, you know, that building is going to be nervous. Instead, it's 4-1. The fans are even more pumped up. Now, sure, I think the Panthers scored about 4 minutes later, and it was 4-2. But still, like, you didn't lose that confidence the Jets were going to win the game. But if they don't get that early goal...
There weren't 14 two-on-ones.
That's right.
And there weren't breakaways.
That's right.
And there wasn't that lax defensive play. And sure, you can say, as you know, it's not Colorado, I understand that, and it's not even Dallas, transition-wise, forward-wise. Mm-hmm. But you still didn't allow those chances. And I think you guys mentioned earlier, Bogosian's return is helpful. He only played 17 and a bit minutes. But I like the way they did that. You know, you want to ease him back into the lineup.
Right.
He's had these groin issues before. Or he's had, you know, issues before in terms of... injuries, and so you want to make sure you're not burdening him too much.
And further to the point about the posts, when I was talking to Andre Pavlik after the game, he acknowledged that. He said, boy, am I lucky. Those posts saved about three or four goals on me. So, I mean, there's an element of luck to these games, but, I mean, it happens on both sides.
I think they got probably the benefit of the calls last night, too.
Oh, there were some missed calls. I mean, you know, again, from our perch, from where we're sitting, we can kind of have a good view of everything that's going on the ice. And some of the non-calls, there was a Trouba non-call.
On the hook on Bergenheim, yeah.
And then there was, Kane got away with at least two slashes.
Yeah, he slashed Goodbrinson. Florida was unhappy about a couple of those no-calls, to put it that way.
Yeah, and so that was interesting in the sense that the refs definitely put the whistles away to a certain degree, because, I mean, it was fairly blatant.
And, you know, guys, one other thing. The Scheifele line is going right now. We talked about Scheifele on Wednesday, so I want to give some equal mic time to Michael Frolik, no pun intended, as he... How important has he been to what the team's been doing lately?
I think we talked about this when he was acquired. We were there at the draft when he was acquired from the Blackhawks for the draft pick, and he's an excellent player. I mean, he has a cup ring already, and, you know, Michael Frolik, let's skip over the fact that we all know that he's a good penalty killer, and everybody knows that. Michael Frolik, I think, has underrated offensive game. And I think he's got great vision of the ice. He's a great skater. He's never going to be an overpowering guy that you know, works the corners or out-muscles guys in front of the net. He's the type of guy that he's more of a playmaker. And, you know, great example is Evander Kane's goal. He scored a really nice goal. And, you know, I think his contributions offensively aren't getting enough credit. And Michael Frolik has been one of the more consistent Jets all of this year. And I think he's someone who is probably due for a nice little contract coming up as a free agent.
That's an interesting topic. We're going to talk about that more later. His contract status as a pending restricted free agent intrigues me. Devin Setoguchi will leave for later on, but, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a contract there in it for the Jets in the future. When we come back, Jets are playing Vancouver, as you guys mentioned, Edmonton and Minnesota this week. Three Western Conference teams and games that they need to win, at least two of the three. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Minutes past the hour. On the Legal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday, December 21st, Richard Pollock, David Minuk, and Ezra Ginsberg. taking you through Saturday afternoon. I got a text from Drew's dad last segment, and this, all the text said was, I like Drew, after Ezzy's shot at Mr. Mindell. Junior, not senior.
Absolutely. And shout out to Sheldon and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club for their continued support of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We love Drew. I mean, he knows. I mean, Drew was at the game yesterday. He knows we're going to give him a hard time. And, you know, trust me, I think he's happy that he's going to Kentucky and he gets a little time away from us.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But, okay, so guys, this week, we talked about it a bit last segment, but the Jets play Vancouver tomorrow night.
Yep.
They play Edmonton Monday night. Then you have your holiday break. Jets are back for Minnesota on Friday. The Jets are 9 points behind Vancouver. Vancouver is actually the number one wild card team because how the NHL does it is they take the top three teams from each division and then all the other teams fight for the wild card. Then you have, so they're 9 points back of Vancouver. They play at Edmonton. They're 12 points ahead of Edmonton. So you guys mentioned, you know, they have their streaks and all that, but you have to beat Edmonton. I don't care if you're home or on the road. And we're going to talk later on about right. What the record needs to be for this team to make the playoffs, ideally, or probably not ideally, but probably just in reality. And then you have your home to Minnesota. The team that you are closest to making the playoffs against, you're 8 points back of Minnesota. So the Jets are 8 points out of the playoffs, long and short of it. But these three games, you know, you're playing one team in the division, two other teams. You're playing a Vancouver team, guys, that doesn't have a ton of offensive depth. Okay, so they shouldn't be outgunning you. Edmonton has scorers, but they can't really play a lot of defense. And then Minnesota, they're going to bore you to death with their speed and the trapping ability and just simplifying the game. But we don't know if Josh Harding's going to yet be back for that game or not. So, and he didn't play last game here, granted, either. The Vancouver game, let's start there. What do the Jets need to do, Ezzy, to beat Vancouver? Because this is the kind of game that, you know, if you're talking seriously about the playoffs, you got to come in here and probably take at least a point.
Well, you know, you mentioned the offensive depth, Richie, in the wild card. The Canucks have won 8 of their last 10 games and are still, in my opinion, a team that will make the playoffs and that is an excellent hockey team. This is the game that scares me even more than the game against the Oilers and the Minnesota Wild. Daniel Sedin and Henrik Sedin are still virtually point-of-game players, and Ryan Kessler is on pace for a 35-goal season, back to where he was before. Mm-hmm. We know about the injuries, and you know, I know Richie just wants me to answer his question because, you know, how to beat the Vancouver Canucks, but it's not going to be easy because this is a group that's been together a lot, and then you've got guys like Mike Santarelli who are contributing secondary offense, and a guy like Chris Higgins has also been good. So how do the Jets beat the Vancouver Canucks? Well, if you're talking about shutting down a team and playing what type of style that the Jets should play. Well, if you're going to get into a game where you're trading chances against the Vancouver Canucks, it could get dangerous and the game could be over early because this is a team that's good on the power play, and Daniel Sedin and Henrik Sedin are two of the most dangerous offensive players in the league still. They're maybe not at the level.
They are,
but,
yeah.
You know, the Vancouver Canucks are a team that's underrated as far as how physical they can get. They have guys and defensemen. Bieksa, Tanev, I think, has done a really good job there. Mm-hmm. But the Jets have to, you know, a start is critical. Discipline is critical. But this is also a team that is playing a different style right now. And I think it's been overblown a little bit that John Tortorella has them playing like the New York Rangers. Sure, you know, he's got them, you know, probably checking their shot blocking stats a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Jets are going to have to play a very smart game because, again, I think the Vancouver Canucks aren't a sexy pick right now as being kind of a contender in the West. And don't get me wrong, I don't think they're going to compete with the Blackhawks or the Kings or the Ducks or the Blues for you know, the Western Conference title this year. But they're a team that can score off the rush and they can beat you in different ways. And the Jets are going to have to play very well. And this isn't going to be a team where you're going to be able to take advantage of them. And again, Lack is playing well in a backup role. Whether it's Lack or Luongo, we don't know at this point. The game isn't until tomorrow night. But, I mean, this it's going to be a tough win. And if you can get the win against the Canucks, at least you know mm-hmm. that you're facing an Oilers team that has all types of problems.
Yeah, you know, you look at the Vancouver Canucks. I think they're a good team, not a great team. You know, they don't have the offensive depth they once did.
I think they're just a step below a great team. I think that they're, I mean, again, to put them in the same class as these other teams in the West right now.
Well, that's
now,
a problem. Look right? at their division, but right? Anaheim, think, San Jose, LA is. Like, I don't think they're as good as any of those teams.
I still think that if you're a team in the, even if you're the Chicago Blackhawks, and now the pressure is off, and that's something. But I agree with what you're saying. I think the Canucks are maybe a little bit less than what they've been in previous years. But, you know, they're still a team that can hurt you in a lot of different ways.
The matchups to me are interesting, because if you're going to shut down Sedin, and Hansen, who they're playing it right yep. now, then really what you're, you know, who are you going to put against that combo? Against that line, excuse me. I mean, basically, we're going to talk about the defense pairings later on. You know, what the Jets did last night. I mean, you're not putting Buff and Party against those guys. Right? I mean, Sedin's not going to kill you speed-wise. They're going to kill you off the cycle and your coverages. So the forwards need to be really good defensively against a team, like against a line like the Sedin's did. But I think when you look at it, I mean, is that a line that Bogosian and Enstrom face? And then they put Trouba up against the Kessler? That seems to me like something they'd think about doing.
You know what? I look at the Canucks and I think to myself, like, this is a team who went into Chicago last night and won. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that was it was a shootout win, but still they went into a building that they haven't had a tremendous amount of success in and came out with a big victory. They're a team that's 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. They're playing like a confident group together. So, you know, you have to look at this game as a huge measuring stick game for Winnipeg, because if Winnipeg is serious about making a playoff push, you can't just beat a Florida team, regardless of whether it was a decisive victory or not, and say, okay, well, that was sufficient. Because the one thing that, you know, Claude Noel's been preaching and everybody's been talking about is consistency, and consistency in your game and bringing this forward. You know, you can't have one nice game and then have crap the bed the next game. We'll get into that more later in the show, but we will, you know, this team, if they want to be serious about making the playoffs, has to win a majority of their games going forward. Mm-hmm. And you can't just beat an Edmonton and lose to a Vancouver and think, well, that's not a big deal. You have to go into Vancouver and play a tough game, and you can't play an Eastern style game, which is going to be a lot more wide open. You have to play a tight game, and that's going to require everybody, and maybe that means dialing back some guys' minutes and increasing other guys and playing a more rolling all four lines, having a little more faith.
You can do that against a good point, because you can do that against Vancouver, because their four lines aren't very good. They're top heavy.
Right.
And if the Jets are worried about their fourth line, it's better than or as good as Vancouver's awful fourth line. So I think that's a really good point, especially the way the Jets faded at the end of the Buffalo game. Mm-hmm. And having played back-to-back in travel, which they're going to be doing. I think that's a really interesting point that you make. I want to switch over to Edmonton. And by the way, you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. The Edmonton Oilers are the team the Jets face on Monday. They can't defend. They're allowing 3.40 goals against per game. That's the worst in the league. They're awful at 5-on-5. They have a top line we all know of Nugent Hopkins, Hall, and Eberle. And then, you know, Gagne, Perron, and Yakupov are certainly a line to take note of. But this team is smaller. They can skate. Their older guys are getting a little bit too old. Their defense is certainly questionable, and their goaltending is certainly questionable. To me, a team that you're far ahead of in the standings, and you got to take care of business. And a team, to me, that you keep your game simple, and you should be okay.
Yeah, it's still a team that can score goals, though, right? For example, they've got 10 more goals than the Oilers, right? So it's, pardon me, the Wild. So it's still a team that can score. Really, for the Winnipeg Jets right now, you're looking at these two games and you're saying, okay, you've come off the Eastern Conference road trip and you knew that you had to come home and you had to probably take 4 of 6 points against the Blues and the Avalanche mm-hmm. and the Stars, and they only got 1 out of 6 points. So now you've won a game and you're going for a couple of road games before you come back home for the Friday game. The next home game.
It's Friday.
Yeah. I thought it was Saturday for a second. And So really, you've got to capitalize on this opportunity here to put together a win streak. And these guys all know this. The Winnipeg Jets, you know, whether you're Claude Noel or you're any member of this Jets team, you know that a streak is necessary to get back in the Western Conference. And it's unfortunate, because I think when you look at all of these one-goal games and all of these points that were left on the board, the Jets have taken steps forward in many different areas. Sure, they've taken steps back in a lot of areas, but against a team like the Edmonton Oilers or the Vancouver Canucks, you still have to find a way to win regardless, because of how far you are behind the playoff line right now.
The Jets right now, well, let's be honest here. Bogosian's back. Aside from Slater and Hauschek, your fourth line center, and a guy who's playing third line, but you signed to a two-way deal, you have your whole team healthy, really. So the excuses are now out the window. And first of all, every team has injury. We're going to be talking about Pittsburgh later. It doesn't have half the roster. Vancouver doesn't have Edler. But you have an opportunity here with your core. Like, this is a team that you thought was capable of making the playoffs. Otherwise, you wouldn't have traded for Setoguchi and Frolik, as far as I'm concerned. So this is a chance now to make your move. Everything's ready. You have your holiday, a little holiday break. You have a big run for January through to February. Obviously, the Olympic break. Your team is healthy. Your group of six on defense is good to go. You're finally getting a top two lines there that seem to be rolling.
You know, it's now's the time.
You know, irrespective of what happens in the Vancouver game, I believe that the key to that Edmonton game will be the first 20 minutes. I think that if the Jets, because that's it, I mean, Edmonton's given up the most goals against in the league. So, I mean, if the Jets can come out and provided that they've won on Saturday and they're riding a bit of a high, this is, of course.
Sunday, you mean?
Sorry, on Sunday. Yeah. And then they come out on Monday and you know, how they play in that first 20 minutes will really, I think, set the stage for that game. Because, you know, you're going to really see whether this team has anything in it and they have the legs to go the distance. Because Edmonton, as you just pointed out, can score goals. So are we going to be in a barn burner where there's going to be like it's going to be a 5-4 game, or are they going to be able to keep it tight, or can the Jets open it up a little bit early on?
One of the issues with the Jets, as far as I'm concerned, is that they always play to the style of their opposition. They play open with open teams, and they play defensive with defensive teams. If you can start establishing a style of play consistently, like you play against Minnesota, they're going to play that same style regardless.
They have to be strong and create their own style. Like Richie, you've got a great style. They got to just say like, "This is our style. We're the Jets. We're gonna go in there, lad, little Wheeler, Buff. We're gonna mess some people up. Trouba, we got some youth. This is Jet style. Let's go."
Dustin Byfuglien has style. He is probably the most fun player to watch on the team. But we're gonna ask after the break: is he playing too much? You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the first hour. I always like Timmy's music playing. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and David Manuk.
This is the type of music, Timmy, that you just want to have, like sip a little glass of brandy and smoke a cigar and, you know, just let it ride, man.
Ezzy's drinking his Crevassier, no big deal.
Breakfast for Ezzy.
The breakfast of champions.
We're going to talk later about the Ezzies that are tonight, by the way. Not only will an explanation follow later on the show of what the Ezzies actually are, but where you can come see the Ezzies live and in person. There'll be a red carpet, or hopefully a carpet. Maybe a shag carpet. We don't really know.
Yeah, yeah.
But what we talked about before the break, what we want to talk about now, we're going to bring Jesse and the intern in here to talk about some stats about that. Is Dustin Byfuglien playing too much? And I asked the question. I've thought about it during the season thus far, but I'm prompted by it mainly based upon his performance on Tuesday night, where he just looked tired, and he's been playing a lot. And you look at his minutes; he's playing the fourth most minutes per game for defensemen in the National Hockey League. He plays 26 minutes and 43 seconds per game. The only three defensemen who play more than him are Ryan Suter, who plays just under 30 minutes a game, Erik Karlsson, and Brian Campbell. Every other defenseman in the National Hockey League plays less than him. He plays more than Shea Weber. He plays more than Drew Doughty. He plays more than Alex Pietrangelo. He plays more than Zdeno Chara by about 2 minutes a game. He plays more than Oliver Ekman-Larsson, PK Subban. I could go on and on. I think we can all agree that many of those, if not all of those defensemen, are more highly regarded in terms of all-around play than is Dustin Byfuglien. So the question for me then is, guys, with the Jets seemingly having a great depth overall on the back end, and we can talk, you know, about some defensive deficiencies. I think Byfuglien is very much at the heart of those with Trouba and with Bogosian now and Enstrom. Are the Jets playing Dustin Byfuglien too much, and therefore does his ice time need to decrease over the remainder of the season?
I think it's a really good question, guys, because I've said this before on the show, I think, and I know everyone, when things are going bad, Dustin Byfuglien seems to be a point of criticism, but to me, Dustin Byfuglien is the MVP of this team. The way he creates offense, he's one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL. Now, the question, Richie, though, is he playing too much? Uh-huh. Yes, I think he is playing too much. I think Dustin Byfuglien is better suited to be a defenseman that's playing with someone else who is obviously complementary to him, but not in a shutdown role. And this is what I mean. Dustin Byfuglien's key strength is his ability to create offense. Yesterday, when it was 3-on-3, remember when the Jets were playing 3-on-3 hockey against the Florida Panthers, and Dustin Byfuglien was out there, and his ability to go around guys, and he's deceiving. mean, Dustin Byfuglien's a big guy. I don't think, you know, I have to say that. Everybody knows Dustin Byfuglien is a man tank. But his ability to, off the rush, create offense, and he's got great hands, he's got a great shot. I mean, I could go on and on about how many valuable assets he plays, but he's not a shutdown defenseman type.
He's not.
He's not a Shea Weber. He's not a Duncan Keith. He isn't someone who has the ability to shut down like the better players, right?
And by the way, I want to note, as you're talking, he's seventh in the league in overall even strength ice time. So it's not like he's logging all of this time on the power play.
No, but he does. He does out there.
But seventh overall in the league in even strength ice time.
And that's the key stat, because obviously the majority of hockey is at even strength, right? So Dustin Byfuglien right now is playing a little bit too much, and I think that can affect his effectiveness. And I look at the makeup of this team, and I think, guys, the future is extremely bright. You've got Jacob Trouba, who's arguably in the Calder consideration right now, if it wasn't for missing 17 games with the neck injury. But you look at the makeup of this team, and you have a lot of offensive-minded defensemen. Tobias Enstrom, again, I think had an amazing game yesterday. But when you get up against bigger guys, bigger competition, if you're putting him out there against the Kopitar, Brown, Williams line, he struggles, or Getzlaf, Perry, and Penner, right? Guy like that. So you got to match these guys up with the right. But I look at who on the Jets is best suited for a shutdown role. It's Bogosian and or Trouba. And those are bigger guys. Guys that are a little bit more physical.
And guys who all play the right side.
All play the right side. Yeah. So, I mean, yes, I think Byfuglien, like, there's nothing wrong if Byfuglien plays 3 or 4 minutes less every game, and maybe you increase Trouba's ice time, because, as we've talked about, for a 19-year-old, Trouba right now is playing like a seasoned veteran.
You know what? It's interesting, because a lot of, in practices and in post-practice scrums with Coach Noel, a lot of people have been asking about that specifically, and about Dustin Byfuglien's need to bring his minutes down. Now, Coach won't necessarily acknowledge that they do need to come down significantly, but he will, especially because...
He's the one playing him that much.
Well, and also because it's often kind of coupled with, should Trouba's minutes be increased to offset Buff's, to decrease Buff's minutes. And I think the truth is this. I think that once he got Bogosian back, he gets that defenseman that he really wants in that role. As you guys said, he's the heavy defenseman. He's the guy that you can use to shut down the team's big players. And that's why, you know, sure, he sheltered him yesterday, only played him 17 minutes, but it's his first game back in weeks. So, of course, that's the reason you're going to play him in a more limited role. But now that you've got Bogosian coming back and healthy, there's no question, I think, that you'll see Buff's minutes decrease. And for the long term view of this team, that's what you want. You want Buff's minutes to be decreased because, first of all, a couple reasons. Number one, because Bogosian can more than handle those extra minutes. His conditioning is insane. So that won't be an issue for him to handle extra time. That's number one. Number two, I personally think that Buff will be a much more effective player playing 22 to 25 minutes a game versus 25 to 30 minutes a game. Like, there's just no question that Buff, with more energy, I mean, as he said, just look what he was able to do when he does that Buff engaged kind of move where he kind of goes around the defenseman and goes around the net, then looks for an opportunity. I'm telling you, he'll be doing that a lot more when he's got the legs, because he's playing, 3 to 4 minutes less a game.
And a lot of people are going to say, well, Byfuglien is our top offensive defenseman. He should be playing 30 minutes, or Trouba should be playing 30 minutes. Not everybody is a Dan O'Chara and Shea Weber and Duncan Keith. To play 30 minutes a game in the NHL, I'm not saying that people don't realize how impressive that is, but I think sometimes we forget actually how impressive that is to be on the ice for half of the game. Competing at that high level is really impressive. And
exactly, nobody does it really anymore, is he? And we're talking about whether or not Dustin Byfuglien. It's playing too much, and you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. And Jesse, the intern, you have some stats here to talk about in terms of Byfuglien's numbers this year.
Yeah, Rich. No doubt Dustin Byfuglien offensively brings a ton to the Winnipeg Jets. In 37 games, he has 6 goals and 20 assists, which we can all agree are great stats for defensemen.
Absolutely.
Top five.
However, though, a stat that isn't talked about as much, don't really hear Claude Noel talk about it either, is Dustin Byfuglien's plus-minus. This guy is minus 13. And for a guy who's logging in that many minutes, to me, it's unacceptable as a top two defenseman. And it reaches the point where if a guy who's logging in that much time and has that poor of a plus minus, you know, as much offense as he brings to the Jets, is Dustin Byfuglien, I mean, defensively, is he a liability? Because with that plus minus, I absolutely think he is.
And that's the thing, you know, there'll be issues with plus minus, and we've talked about them, who you're playing against and how much you're playing and all that stuff. But one of the things that you can look at, too, is what is plus minus is relative to the team. When Zach Bogosian's plus 9, he hasn't played as many games, 15 less, and Dustin Byfuglien's minus 13, that's a 22 plus minus gap, and that's a big gap. And David mentioned before, you know, plus minus Zach Bogosian in terms of wanting to lean on him. And I realize he's been injured, but he's a guy, he's a horse. And it might be you play Zach, and he had a nice shot on the power play yesterday, but it might mean, you know, you log more even strength and PK minutes, and you kind of a lot more specialized minutes, Ezzy, for some of these guys. Because the Jets have some guys that are just good in certain roles, but not great in other roles.
Right, and hockey's all about roles. I mean, there's a reason why you have guys on the fourth line that you can put out there for 7 or 8 minutes, and you know that they'll keep the puck in the other team's zone, and they can maybe fight, they'll chip in the odd goal. But as far as roles on this team, Dustin Byfuglien's a unique player. I mean, Jesse mentions the plus-minus, and you can't ignore that. And we're not coming down on Buff, because if you're listening earlier in the segment, I do think he's been the most valuable player on this team for his ability to create offense. Whenever the Jets have seemed to need a goal or someone to create offense, Byfuglien's always there. And he, you know, Claude Noel puts him out there, and he goes out there and he does his job. Yes, does he have trouble with his endurance and turnovers? Yes. I mean, there was a turnover yesterday.
Mm-hmm. First goal.
Right? Yep. But how many times has Byfuglien, you know, created offense and for this team? So, I mean, you know, it's difficult, but it's interesting to have this conversation, because if Buff can be more effective by playing less time, I think it's worth exploring for Claude Noel. And the question, I guess, becomes, Richie, and I'll switch it around because you're asking all the questions today, does Claude Noel feel like he has someone else to replace those minutes? And is it Bogosian? Does he want to play Trouba more? Or is he still looking at Trouba and saying, okay, he's still 19 years old, can I play Trouba 25 minutes a game? Well, he's done it a few times.
Good question. I mean, you look at ice time for the year so far, 26 minutes and 43 seconds for Byfuglien, 23:50. This is average ice time per game. 23:50 for Enstrom, 22:36 for Bogosian, 21:22 for Trouba. If you take Byfuglien's 3-4 minutes, take him down and spread him out between Bogosian and Trouba or whoever it may be, I think you're better off in the long haul. Another thing to note is you look at the shift length. All the top defensemen in the National Hockey League, the shift length, Byfuglien's taking long shifts. And what happens when you take long shifts? You get tired. And what happens when you get tired? You make mental mistakes. And it's hard to play in the NHL, as you mentioned, 30 minutes a game. It's really hard also to play minute 10 shifts. Regardless of whether or not you're playing defense. I know it's easier to play a longer shift on defense, but Byfuglien is engaged offensively. And when you engage offensively, it exerts more time and, of course, more effort. Not more time, more effort. And, you know, that's draining for you. And a long shift early in the game might mean something happens later on. A long shift early in the game might mean something happens early in the game. And that's a problem. When we come back, I want to ask this question. Are Jets fans too critical? You're listening.
Oh, we're going to get
the
some tweets
Kerr
here,
Rocky Show.
We're
going to
get some tweets
on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Segments through our first hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and David Minuk. This song is actually about Drew running with the devil, but the devil's not here today, so Drew's dad's not going to like that one either. Dave?
Just some updates from practice. Coach Noel said that Andrew Ladd took a maintenance day today, and he said that many of his players could use one. He also said that Grant Klitsam is banged up, which is interesting because before it was as a result of the flu. Mm-hmm. The reason why he wasn't playing, and now he's saying that he's banged up. So we're not sure if those two things are connected. But that was from practice earlier today, and now the team has jetted off to Vancouver.
No pun.
No pun intended.
When did the Ezzies start?
Do you want to explain to the listeners what the Ezzies are?
For those who don't know, the Ezzies are basically a game-changing award show that's happening tonight at the Chill Bar and Grill. But essentially, what the Ezzies were.
Well, maybe were after tonight.
Absolutely. They're basically Twitter awards. And last year, during the lockout still, I know we said we would never mention that word on this show. But what we did was with my colleague Dave Manouk here and Sean Jacob, a.k.a. Damone1799 on Twitter. Follow him. We created the Ezzy Awards. And we just had fun with it. You know, we were just hanging out, having a couple pops.
Gary Lawless of this fine station in the Free Press was not happy. Didn't he not win one last year?
Well, Gary says that he doesn't acknowledge the Ezzies or they don't exist to him. But the reality is, this is the, you know, down low. You're getting the E! True Hollywood Story right now. Hustler won the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh, wow.
Hustler won the big award. And this year it's actually called the Andrew Hustler Patterson Lifetime Achievement Award. So that's the big award. That's the last award of the night after best tweet of the year, best hashtag of the year, and so forth. So Gary is just really upset that he hasn't won an Ezzy. And I'm trying to tell him, Gary, well, you got to still tune in because you might win one this year.
So it's going to be like, what's her name from All My Children or whatever it was?
Susan Lucci.
Susan Lucci? Is Gary going to be like Susan Lucci now?
Yeah, Gary, you know, I'm not going to promise anything, but I'm just saying, Gary might get one.
Tune in.
He might get one this year. He might not get one too, but.
Well, we won't talk about you being critical of Gary, but we will talk about whether Jets fans are too critical of this team. And I'm asking you guys first before I opine on this topic, David. Take it away. What do you think?
You know what? It's I'm torn. I mean, there's definitely that segment of the base that is highly critical. And I mean, there's so many segments, and that's the problem, right? Like, you've got the segment that will look purely at the numbers of the team and use a math analysis of everything the Jets do, and they'll say this is the reason why the team isn't doing well. And then you've got then on the polar opposite end, you've got the pure fan base in terms of just kind of, I guess I don't know what you want to call them, but like the guys who are just everything the Jets do is 100% okay and is right, and the Jets can do no wrong.
Half glass full.
That's right. And then you've got like the people that, you know, then you've got the kind of the people in the middle, and it's so tough because I see from when I post on illegalcurve.com and just when you read message board and you see Twitter, you see people that want to support the team, and I think that there's you can't just solely just support a team without being critical. You have to give fair analysis. You can't just be critical to be critical, because there's no point in that. That's just being disingenuous. I think the key is you can look at this from a clinical point, you know, just analyze
no
the
blind,
team.
No blind support.
And that's the whole point. And you can't just give it blind support. And you have to be able to look at this team and say what this team is, what this team isn't, what this team needs to do to improve. But there's no absolutes. And that's the one thing I cannot stand when I read on either message boards or I read on Twitter, is the absolutists, the people who absolutely know everything. And if they were the GM, this is absolutely what they would do. And if you don't agree with them, then you are somehow either an idiot or you just don't have a brain. And it's like, well, no, I have an opinion. My opinion is different than yours, and I'm entitled to have an opinion. So I think that there's room for everyone. Do I think that the fan base, to answer your question after my kind of soliloquy, but like, I think the fan base is not overly critical. I think that there's definitely a segment, a rising segment, that's getting more critical, and I think that's fair. I don't think that there's anything wrong with critiquing a team. You pay good money to support this team. You're entitled to have an opinion, even if you don't. By the way, are a season ticket holder. Obviously, you're entitled.
I want to just quickly get in there before I throw it to Ezzy, because I think that's an issue. Not an issue. I think that's a fact. Is that when you're charging big money for tickets, people will probably have more of an opinion than if they don't pay big money. Doesn't mean you can't have an opinion. I certainly think everybody can have an opinion, and the tickets are very expensive. But that also relates to television now. You're charging, if you're not a Bell customer, you're charging $10 a month to watch the Jets. So if I'm watching the Jets for 8 months of the year, I'm paying $80, you know, you're paying about $100 a year. I think that doesn't not necessarily the word entitle, but it certainly creates more conversation, because if you're paying for it, I think you feel a different connection to the team and a different sense of being able to criticize the team than if you're getting it for free. Doesn't mean if you get it for free, you're not able to, but I feel like you can be more, or you're more apt to be more critical if you're paying, because you're essentially paying for it any which way, right? You're paying to watch it. You're not paying to listen to it, but you're paying to watch it, and you're paying to go to it. And if you're paying your good hard-earned money, which it is, no matter what situation we're talking about, everybody who's paying has worked in some form for their money, and you don't feel like you're getting quality for your money. It's like anything. You go to a movie, a bad movie, you feel like it was a waste of money. If you go to a dinner and it wasn't good, you feel like it was a waste of money. If you pay to watch the Jets play and they had a bad game, You know, it's more money, and you feel like it was a waste of money. So I think, and that gets back to yesterday's game. If the Jets come out yesterday like that, Ezzy, have a great game and lose, I don't think the Jets have a great game emotionally and effort-wise and lose. I think the Jets fans can stomach it. It's the games where they come in, lose 3-0, you don't say anything, where Jets fans are up in arms.
Right, and we know, guys, how passionate Winnipeg Jets fans are. And Winnipeg Jets fans are also educated. And sometimes it's almost a case of Jets fans being overeducated and having the ability to have all of these stats in front of them. Now it's different. It's not like in the good old days when the stats came out every Tuesday. Now everyone's got high-speed internet and Twitter, and you're constantly bombarded. Everybody knows all of the stats. Everybody gets the news instantly, right? We know who's practicing. We know who isn't practicing. Everybody, it's so instantaneous now. And I think we're at a point where everybody is kind of almost riding a wave, not a bacon wave, but riding a wave of emotion here. And, you know, Richie, you mentioned, you know, the investment, and you're talking about a financial investment, whether you're a season ticket holder, a mini pack holder, someone who goes to a couple games a year, or someone that subscribes to the TSN Jets station, which I recommend everybody does, obviously. You have an emotional investment. So you have that financial investment, but you have the emotional investment. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, it being like a movie. Well, it is the same.
Well,
because
you follow
Breaking Bad, and you care what happens to the characters. You want players to be successful. And when they struggle, whether we're at the chill or we're at the home games or everything, we're always talking to fans and our friends and everything. And when the Jets aren't winning, it's a huge kind of depressing feeling. And when they're winning, last night, everybody's happy because the Jets finally get a win at home. But you have to be level-headed in the sense that this is a tough to me. This is how I could sum up what's going on right now. The Jets have struggled with consistency and putting win streaks together, and they've moved to a conference that is right now. This might be one of the best conferences we've seen in a long time. You've just got a lot of good teams, a very stacked conference. So you have a team that, sure, they need more wins, but if they're in the Eastern Conference again, you know, going back to, well, what if they're in the Eastern Conference? They're obviously not. I'm just saying. Playing as bad as possibly people are letting on.
But the point is, are they too critical, though?
I think.
I think they are too critical.
I think absolutely Jets fans can be too critical, because when you are, losing one-goal games. And how many times this year, I'll give you two examples of one-goal games that the Jets could have won against two teams that I think are better than the Jets, but Minnesota Wild and St. Louis Blues. After those losses, those were tough losses. They, as you mentioned last segment, they played a little bit more to that style. They tried to play a little bit more of a defensive game, and after those two games, it was Jets got to make a move. The coach needs to be fired, and the Jets go out on the road. They win 4 of 6 games, and then all of a sudden, everybody's happy again. The optimism is high. You have to be critical, but you have to pick your spots, and I think you got to pick your spots and realize that hockey's a team game, and to pick out individual players. And I know, Richie, you've done the post game show with Rick Ralph. I'm going to be doing the post game show as well.
December 29th, yeah, Colorado game.
I think the ratings are going to be an all time low when I'm on there. But it's the callers call in, and to me, it's criticism, but it's passion. I mean, We didn't have a hockey team for 15 years. I'm talking about the city of Winnipeg, and you know, the Jets come back, and it's the third season. We want to get in the playoffs. Everybody's looking at this team and saying, you know, this could be a playoff team. It's not happening. I think there's frustration involved. There's frustration. There's people have emotional investment. I think that you're going to see people. Then the criticism starts to come out, and then all the armchair general managers, Dave, come out.
Well, it's interesting. Again, going further to your point, it's in terms of being a reactionary fan base. You'll oftentimes see, is it time to, for example, let's say there was a message board thread. Mm-hmm. Is it time to send Mark Scheifele down to the AHL? Mm-hmm. And then you see Mark Scheifele rip off something like this, and then suddenly the tune changes. Now the heading of the topic doesn't change, but it's interesting. You know what I mean? It's interesting to kind of see the flow of emotion through this team. Should Buff be traded? Then Buff rips off. You know what I mean? So Ezzy's right.
I mean, you're going to want to keep him 2 days after he has great games, and you want to trade him two days before.
And again, for people listening out there, We're victims of that as well. I'm not victims. We're proponents, I guess, if you want to call it that, in the media. I mean, when Mark Scheifele isn't doing well, you know, you can't ignore that Mark Scheifele is struggling, but he's a rookie. I mean, it's only 37 games into the season for him. Mm-hmm. This is his first NHL season, and he's improved. And, you know, you got to give him credit, and you have to hope that it continues, because he's a big part of the Jets' present and future. But you still have to have these conversations and arguments. They're good water cooler discussions as far as who the Jets should trade or who. But again, this is a team that right now is still finding an identity. They really are. It might be the third season, but there have been a lot of different moves, and you've got two young guys playing a lot of ice time, and it's a period of transition, and there have been a lot of bumps on the road.
So the question is, Richard, what do you think about the fan base? Do you think they've been too critical? I mean, again, as he said, you've been on the post-game show, hear a lot of the calls.
I don't think fans are too critical. I think that when you pay hard-earned money, or you don't, I think you can have an opinion. I think critical, so long as you're generally realistic, only creates a higher threshold, or at least a higher expectation, of success. And I think, again, an expectation of success can only help people. If you watch 24/7, that's one of the things that Mike Babcock says. He says, when you are, you know, the original six teams, it's a different feel. And Nicholas Cronwall says, the expectation is that you make the playoffs. And I think that's something that you want. You want high expectations, and it allows for success. After the break, we're going to talk to Mike Colligan about a successful team in Pittsburgh with the Penguins on a hot streak right now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours left to go on this Saturday, December 21st, 2013. Coming up on the holiday season, of course. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas to all. From the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Richard Pollack, Ezra Ginsberg, and David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com. We've got Mike Colligan on the line. Quickly, Dave, before we go, you have a couple tweets to read from our listeners.
Yeah, one says, Sid Wright, 89 writes, Jets fans are not too critical. We expect an honest effort every game, and when we don't get it, in brackets most nights, we get upset.
Josh, I like that tweet.
Yeah, that was a good one. Josh K. wrote, I just think you expect more than this team's capable of. Nothing better than incredibly passionate fans. Being passionate while still being realistic about your team is very important.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
When we have any Pittsburgh Penguin questions, business questions, or just general hockey questions, we usually get Mike Colligan on the line, and Mike is nice enough to join us this afternoon. Mike, thank you for joining us. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing pretty well, guys. I'll tell you, out in the east side of the continent here, we're getting 60, 70 degree weather. I'm sure you guys don't have quite that in Winnipeg, but certainly doesn't feel like hockey weather right now.
We have to cancel the planned outdoor hockey game that was going to be played after our show today because it's about minus 47 outside. So hopefully we'll reschedule for a nicer day. And Mike, we want to start and ask you about, you know, obviously the Penguins have a lot of injuries, which we'll discuss in a second, but Sidney Crosby, the way he's playing right now, have you ever seen him play better?
I'll tell you, I get that question, I think, every single year. It's something it's funny with Sidney Crosby. You think he can't possibly get any better, but he always seems to find areas of his game to improve on. And a few years ago, he wasn't shooting quite enough. He didn't have a great shot, a goal scorer's shot, and he really worked on that for a couple off seasons and became a 50-goal scorer. And after that, he worked on his face-offs. He wasn't happy being just a 50% guy. He wanted to be one of the best in the league, and he's certainly been able to do that, and he's become kind of the go-to guy when the Penguins need a critical face-off win. And I think you're exactly right. It's all coming together now. You wonder if he can keep getting better. I don't even know where he would improve. But the play of his line mates, Pascal Dupuis and Chris Kunitz, and the chemistry that group has, I think is what makes him almost unstoppable, because no defensive pair can match up with what those three bring, the speed, the chemistry that they have. It's really tough to stop when they're rolling on all cylinders.
Mike, it's tough to believe, but hard to believe, I should say. A couple of weeks from now, roughly, we're going to find out who's going to be on Team Canada for the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics. We're also going to find out who's going to be on other teams as well. But a guy that I know that you're aware of is on the radar of Team Canada is Chris Kunitz, and we've talked about him a lot on this show. And I think that he deserves a lot of consideration for being on this team just because he plays so well with Sidney Crosby. Do you think Kunitz will make Team Canada? Quite simply, do you think he'll make Team Canada?
Yeah, I think he will. I think if it came down to the top 12 forwards or the most talented forwards in Canada, I don't think Chris Kunitz is in that conversation. But I think when you consider you're building an Olympic team where you don't necessarily want all of the best, offensive players, you need to build a team. And I think Brian Burke really showed that last year and how he built Team USA, or the last Olympics, he built Team USA into a really balanced team that had guys that did different things, and they weren't all scorers, but he had penalty killers. He had forecheckers. I think that's where Kunitz works his way onto this Team Canada team, because he can do so many things. He has that chemistry with Sidney Crosby, which I think is something that's very underrated. There's not a lot of guys that have had success with Crosby. You think of Jerome Iginla last year. Mm-hmm. Came in at the trade deadline to Pittsburgh, never really clicked. Marian Hossa was a big pickup a couple years ago. It took him and Crosby a month or two to really get going and on the same page. I think it's tough to play with Crosby, and Kunitz has shown he can do that. So I think that in its own, and the way that he's playing right now, I think it's at the top of his career. I think he works his way into that roster in a couple months.
Mike, the Penguins have been unstoppable in their last 10 games, and I think they've won their last 6 in a row. But they're doing this despite the fact that they have a ton of injuries to their defense, including Martin, Orpik, Letang, and Scuderi. Can you give us an update on these players?
Yeah, it is funny. I think at one point they've had 10 or 11 guys out at a time. Even on the back end, you've got all those names, but you've got Evgeny Malkin up front, who's been out. Mm-hmm. Tanner Glass, who's been out for a while, who you guys probably know pretty well from his Winnipeg days.
But
on the back end, Brooks Orpik, he's practicing with the team now, coming back from that incident with Scott Thornton a week or so ago. Rob Scuderi, he's waiting for contact right now. I'd put him at about 10 days before he really gets close to getting back into the lineup. I'm not too sure what's going on with Chris Letang. He supposedly has a cast on his left wrist. He's definitely going to be out till after the Christmas break, but not too sure what the timeline is there. They've been pretty quiet as far as that goes. And with Paul Martin, he's going to be out a little bit longer than most of those guys. He's going to be probably out until mid or late January with a broken leg. And then you throw on top of that Derek England, who has a suspension and has been out of the lineup. That's 5-year top 6 defenseman, and I don't think there's many teams in the NHL that could be 500 with that many guys out, let alone the winning streak that you mentioned that these Penguins are on.
We should mention also, Mike, that the Penguins are playing right now. They're playing the Calgary Flames and are up 2-0 in the second period. We're joined by Mike Colligan of the Hockey Writers and Forbes Sports Money to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mike, young defensemen are something that the Penguins have, a few of them, and a few quite talented defensemen. Olli Mäta has been one that the expectations were high, but probably not for him to perform as well as he has this season. Can you talk about his game and what makes him so good for people who haven't seen him play?
Yeah, we just talked about all those talented defensemen the Penguins have, and to me, I thought there's no way a 19-year-old coming up from juniors would ever have a chance to make the team out of camp. It's just not something that the Penguins have done. They've taken their time, kind of the Detroit method, where you give these guys a chance to really make sure that they're ready for the NHL jump, but the team felt he was worth a shot. They had some salary cap flexibility come up at the last minute, and they thought, let's see what he can do for that, 6-8 game trial that you can get out of these junior players. And I think the way that he played, the maturity that he showed, I think allowed him to kind of carve out that permanent spot on this Penguins roster. And I think what makes him so good is he plays a simple game. He's not an offensive guy. He's a very, solid defensive defenseman, a really solid base for a 19-year-old. I don't see guys with that much strength in the lower body that I've seen out of Olli Mäta, and I think he makes the simple plays on the breakout. He doesn't try to get too crazy. He's played with Chris Letang, which can be very difficult to kind of babysit for Letang when he's running around the ice, and I think he's done a very good job in that. And I think that's what's been probably the biggest surprise of this Penguins team is the way that he's played, and now he's up to 28, 29 minutes a night with all of these injuries. That's really one of the best stories, I think, of this Penguins team, and you wonder if it wasn't related to goal scoring for the Calder Trophy race. I wouldn't be surprised. Olli Mäta has been at least one of the most impactful rookie players so far in the NHL today.
Mike, you talk about all of these defensemen that are injured right now, Chris Letang, Rob Scuderi, Brooks Orpik. Are the Penguins going to have to make a move? What do you see happening once all of these guys are healthy? Do you see someone getting sent down? Do you see a trade happening? What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's a good question, and unfortunately with this Penguins team, they've really never had to face that situation. They seem to always have new injuries coming up or suspensions or what have you. But yeah, that's going to be the biggest question, especially on the back end where you've got so many options now. Most of the guys that they've brought up, like Simone Dupre and Brian Dumoulin, they're younger guys that don't require waivers, so they'll obviously head back down to Wilkes-Barre in the American Hockey League. But there are going to be some tough decisions here, but I think in a what comes from a situation like this is you get a guy like Mata to have that experience later in the season when maybe you have a situation where you're leaning on Mata to step up and be a big player down the stretch or in a playoff game. He's now had this, you know, mid-season experience to really get himself comfortable. He's not being thrown into the fire, and I think that's a huge benefit from that. So there are going to be some tough decisions. I think it's going to be big competition, and I think healthy competition, but certainly good things for a Penguins team that's in pretty good position for the playoffs right now.
Mike, how would you rate the job of Dan Bylsma so far this year?
That's a good question, because I can't tell what is Dan Bylsma and what is coming from Jacques Martin, who was the assistant coach that they brought in the offseason, kind of an underrated move, but he came in around the July-August time frame as an extra assistant coach. And I think Martin has been the driver behind a lot of the changes, but I don't want to, you know, not say Bylsma has played a role in that as well. But I think the Penguins are just really playing well this year. They were always a really predictable team in prior years. Their forechecks were always the same. The neutral zone play was always the same. Their breakouts were the same. And I think teams are starting to pick up on that. They realized how you beat the Pittsburgh Penguins, and especially teams when you get into a seven-game playoff series. Once they shut down the Penguins' primary game plan, they were done. Bylsma didn't show that he was a really good in-game adjuster, like we see from some other head coaches. And I think this year it's been totally different. They've got a lot of variety in their game. It's unpredictable. It's tough to stop. And they execute it really, really well. So I don't know how much is Bylsma, how much is Martin or other influences, but I think it's from a coaching standpoint, this is probably the best coach team I've seen during Dan Bylsma's tenure.
Joined by Mike Colligan of the Hockey Writers and Forbes Sports Money, talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, David Mnookin, Ezra Ginsberg in studio. You know, Mike, we come into the season, we ask about Marc-Andre Fleury. There's tons of questions about him, and he comes up so far this year, and his statistics are great. I haven't had a chance to really see the Penguins play more than a couple of games, but he looks like he's having a great season thus far, and you can obviously touch on that. But does it matter in terms of the playoffs? And that's all anybody's worried about in Pittsburgh, especially with the weak conference, is how will Marc-Andre Fleury perform and how will he handle it mentally when it comes to the pressure time? Can you speak to that?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, he wasn't invited to the Olympic camp, and I think after the playoff meltdown that he had, certainly not a surprise, but the way he's playing now, you could argue he should be in that mix. And that's the biggest question is, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury's cruising along through the regular season. They've got some weak opponents right now where he's racking up wins, and the stats are pretty good. But what happens when you get into those critical games and he lets up another bad goal, and suddenly the confidence and the swagger that he has right now it comes into question? And I think that's going to be the biggest thing. I think he's made a lot of good changes in the way he plays the game. He's become more efficient in his movements. He's gotten much better at tracking long shots. I've noticed some changes there. More in the mold of like a Jonathan Quick, who I think is a guy that really picks up the puck well coming from the point. And I've seen Fleury kind of modeling himself after Quick in that way. And so I think all those changes are great. I wonder what happens when he panics a little, when he lets up a bad goal, because that's when I've seen Fleury kind of unravel in the past, is when he loses that confidence. It seems to snowball, and it can get ugly fast. And unfortunately for the Penguins, without Thomas Vokoun right now, he's possibly done for the season and perhaps his career with a blood clot issue. There's really no backup plan. So it's going to be Marc-Andre Fleury kind of live or die for this Pittsburgh Penguins team.
Mike, you're one of our most frequent guests of this show, obviously, and we're going to have you on several times, I would imagine, before, if obviously you're willing to come on. I know that we're always happy to have you on. We're going to have you several times on several times before the trade deadline, but I don't know if it's too early to ask this, but as far as Ray Shiro goes, what's he looking for as far as an addition leading up to the trade deadline?
Yeah, you know, it seems like this year with the salary cap getting pushed down, every team kind of has a hole, with the exception of maybe the Chicago Blackhawks. It seems like every team just can't address their whole roster without that cap flexibility. So that's certainly going to be a challenge for teams like the Penguins. But if I had to pick one thing, and let's say we're not talking about a backup goaltender for Marc-Andre Fleury, then I think it's going to be the third and fourth lines. I think they've got a lot of options there, but no one really stands out. I mean, when you look at the Penguins' top six forwards, it's a no-brainer. That's as good as you get in the league with James Neal, Evgeny Malkin, Crosby, Kunitz, Dupuis that we talked about. That's a group that's untouchable. But the third and fourth line, that's kind of what wins you Stanley Cups in my mind. You'd think back to the teams that have won Cups over the last few years. They've all had really impactful third lines with a strong identity, and right now I think the Penguins just don't have that, and so I don't know how it comes together. Maybe it comes from internally, and maybe guys step up and take on those roles, but right now that's kind of what I would look for, is maybe supplementing that third and fourth line and solidifying the checking lines, because with the defensive depth they have and that top six forward group, certainly they should be in the mix for another Stanley Cup conversation here.
Mike, final question will be, do you think Jason Botterill will get a serious look in Buffalo or Calgary?
Yeah, so Jason Botterill, assistant general manager of the Penguins, he has been in the conversations for Buffalo. I know the Buffalo asked for permission from the Penguins to interview him, and they were granted that right. I don't know where that process stands, and it seems like Buffalo has expanded their pool of candidates, which I think is smart. When you think of a general manager search, maybe you have two or three guys that you're really interested in. But that's an opportunity to bring other guys from around the league into your room and say, hey, you know, how would you run this team if you were GM of the Buffalo Sabres? And you can almost just accumulate all that data and insight. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's smart that LaFontaine expanded that list, if anything, just to get more information and ideas. But Botterill was on that original short list, so I think he'll be in the mix there. I don't see him being in the mix in Calgary with Brian Burke in the picture there and obviously playing a strong role in the management. I don't think that's a situation that Botterill will go for, because I think Ray Shearer will tell him that you want to be in a position where you're kind of, it's your team. You're running the team how you want. You don't have someone looking over your shoulder. I know that was a big thing for Shearer when he was coming from the Nashville organization, and Pittsburgh granted him that you know, sole decision-making authority. So I think he'll advise Botterill to do the same as he looks for a GM job in the next few years here.
Mike Colligan, HockeyWriters.com and Forbes Sports Money, as good as it gets. Thanks very much for your time on this Saturday afternoon, and a happy holidays to you.
You too, guys. Take care.
Happy holidays, Mike.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the record the Jets need to have if they want to realistically have a shot to make the playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Nice moves. Nice dance moves, Ezzy. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, David Manouk. Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Saturday afternoon of the holiday season. Everybody's in a jolly good mood today. Tim Debenham doing a terrific job as usual. Love his music selection. He's got Double Up the Music on the way in, on the way out. He's doing a fine job. We don't give him enough credit. And of course, Merry Christmas to Timmy for this holiday season. I got to say, right before we get into how many points the Jets realistically need, what the record needs to be for them to make the playoffs, the fake Ezra Ginsberg Twitter account is easily the best Twitter account on the internet right now.
It's funny. And I happen to know it's someone we know who, just so it's not like a rogue person, it's someone we know. I'm not going to reveal the identity of fake Ezra Ginsberg, but it is funny. It's
not you.
It's
Stay after the one recent tweet.
Right.
Stay after the Ezzies for the real Ezzies, where at ICEZG, which of course is you on Twitter, drinks whiskey and creates awkward moments for waitresses.
It's I think I tweeted out earlier this week. I'm pretty sure the fake Ezra Ginsberg account is more real than my own Twitter account. Like, it's stuff that ridiculous stuff that I would tweet.
Another recent one. Can anyone tell me how many waitresses I asked to marry me last night?
I love it. Twitter, isn't Twitter just great?
Isn't Twitter something?
Twitter,
the Jets are playing. The Jets have played 37 games, guys.
Yeah.
Okay? They have 45 games left. Quick math. Right now, the Jets have 37 points in 37 games. So, of course, that means they're on pace for 82 points. Mm-hmm. A point a game, they're on pace for 82 points. The team that they're chasing in the standings right now, the eighth place team, as they used to be called, but the second wildcard team is the Minnesota Wild, who are on pace, as of today, for 99.7 points. So, quick math on that is a 17.7 point gap in terms of projected points. I don't mean to put a damper on anybody's playoff aspirations, but let's get real here. What do the Jets need to do? And I'll tell you the actual numbers, and we can talk about how that's going to happen if it is. Quickly, before I do that, the Jets have played 20 games at home thus far and 17 games on the road. So, of course, that means they have 21 home games remaining and 24 games on the road. With 45 games left, for the Jets to reach the 99-point threshold, which actually Minnesota is projected to pass, they're projected for 99.7, so say 100, the Jets need to go 31-14 on the remaining games. And that is going to be extremely difficult, guys. You guys know that. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. 31-14. So when we talk about three-game segments, to simplify, when we talk about three-game segments, like the Jets go, they play Vancouver, Edmonton, Minnesota, have to win two of three, and then have right. to get a couple other wins in there as well. They have to keep going. And otherwise, you just can't make the playoffs, simply, unless Minnesota fades that badly. And we're not even talking about the teams that are in between those teams. There are teams between, like Phoenix is between Minnesota and the Jets. So what do you guys think? I mean, obviously, the urgency has to already have taken place. Certainly needs to be in place going forward, but the odds are very slim right now.
Some people would argue, and they're not wrong, that the Jets are not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. And
this is true.
And so clearly there's still a chance. So you're saying there's a chance. Well, there is a chance that the Jets could make the playoffs, but they're going to have to go on one hell of a run. And that really started yesterday, mm-hmm. And then it just builds. And they can't, as I said earlier in the show, they cannot simply win one, lose one, or win two, lose two. You can't do that. And we've already, what is it? You have to go about 700 for the rest of the season to have a good shot at the playoffs. Now, is there a chance they could do it? For sure. But, I mean, Elliot Friedman had some stat from earlier in the season that said, teams that are out of the playoffs by November.
69%
okay.
of their games.
So, but teams that are not in the playoff picture by November 1st, mm-hmm. I think only four teams have actually come back and actually gone into the playoffs, having been outside the playoff picture after November 1st. So the Jets were not in the playoff picture before November 1st. It's a tall task. Now, is it impossible? No, of course, it's sports. That's the reason why you play hockey. It's because anything could happen. Mm-hmm. The Jets could form a cohesive group. Other teams could have catastrophic injuries. And simply put, there's nothing to suggest that the Jets couldn't conceivably get into the playoffs if they go on an incredible run. But they have to go on that run. They can't just talk about going on a run. And they mm-hmm. can't simply, like I said, win one, lose one. Win one, lose one. You have to do something that, look at Pittsburgh. Look at Anaheim. Those are teams that are going on crazy 10-game runs. And the Jets have to do that pretty much for the remainder of the season.
There are two games right now, two teams, excuse me, between Minnesota and the Jets, that being Phoenix and Dallas. The difference, of course, is that Phoenix and Dallas each have three games in hand on Winnipeg and Minnesota. So that's something to note because, if Phoenix were to win all three of those games that they have in hand, they would go up to 48 points and the Jets would be 11 points out of the playoffs with equal games played. Ezzy?
Well, we're talking about all of these different winning percentages and the amount of games that are required. And, yeah, sure, does Colorado fade a little bit? Does Minnesota fade a little bit? Does the amount of points required to make the playoffs in the Western Conference change maybe? So if it's not 99, maybe it's 96, 97. Right. It's not going to change that much. Right. So, yeah, you're looking at, at the very least, somewhere in the neighborhood of from this point forward, the Jets are going to have to win, not get a point, but cleanly win 29 to 31 games. You said 31. Let's, for the benefit, sake of argument, say take a couple games off and say so they go 29-16. So they're 65% of their wins or 70%. It's somewhere in that neighborhood. That's the reality. And if you can get a couple points on Sunday, and then you can get a couple points on Edmonton, it gets easier and easier. Mm-hmm. And again, I go back to the level of play and how good it is in the Western Conference right now, that's just what it is. And you know, your team, the Vancouver Canucks, have won 21 of 38 games. They're in sixth place in the West, but they've got the wild card in their division, right? So that's how good it is. You have to be a team that wins 3 of 4 games, that wins 5 of 6 games, so that you can get in a position to take a little bit of pressure off yourself. So the Jets get the big win last night versus the Florida Panthers, but the uphill climb isn't going to really change. It's not going to get any, I guess, the climb isn't going to get any shorter, if you want to look at it like that. My metaphors are horrible right now. But the Jets have to put together these win streaks, 5, 6 games, whatever you want to say. It's going to make it easier if you do it now. Because if you're saying, well, they have to win 31 out of 45 games now, Dave, well, if you lose 2 out of 4, and then you haven't gone anywhere. And when we're backtracking again, and we're talking about this a week from now or 2 weeks from now, right? So now is the time, because you remember the St. Louis Blues a few years back when Ken Hitchcock first got there. Mm-hmm. Remember how far down the standings the Blues were?
Yeah.
Took over for Davis Payne. So you're going to have to do a run like the St. Louis Blues did. And, you know, Dave mentioned, you know, it's not impossible for this to happen. Absolutely, it's not impossible. And they have the ability to in them. And it starts with the mini road trip and continues throughout the remainder of the season, really.
Sports Club stats, I mean, some people have, there's a little issue in terms of flawed, but ideal, you know, in an ideal world, they're a little bit more particular in terms of their numbers, and then what they do is they project percentages in terms of chances to make the playoffs. But we'll say, okay, they're completely accurate. Right now they have the Jets at 2.8% to make the playoffs. What do you guys think is the percentage? Because, of course, you know, look at Dallas is 29%. A few things change every day, and boom. What do you guys think are the percent chance that the Jets make the playoffs as it stands on December 21st, 2013, David?
I hate to be a pessimist, but I'm going to put it at a 10 to 15% chance that the Jets can overcome their limitations.
Right, and you have to throw a little bit of your optimism in there, unless you're just looking at pure stats and the chances and the records. And I guess the Dallas Stars, because they've played 3 less games than the Jets but are only 2 points ahead, they're giving them quite a bit more because they're factoring in that they'll get a couple more wins there. But I'll go with Dave. I'm going to say about 10 to 15%, but again, that changes and gets better if they can pick up a couple wins here on the road.
Well, you know, with the Jets... Well, I mean, the Blues, excuse me, they say no pain, lots of gain a couple years ago. But the Jets, we want them to play tough, you know, no pain, no gain. So we'll see what happens. Next segment, we're going to talk about the Jets' new defense pairings as of last night and what they should do. Grant Clitsam, Keaton Ellerbe, we're going to break it all down. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.